Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. You don't want to take anybody too serious who wears a Mickey Mouse wristwatch. Well, you don't want to take me too serious anyhow. I'm just a guy who's learned how to live without drinking or using anything chemical in my system to get me through one day. And I want you to know that this is the day I get to stay sober. I don't get to stay sober because I've been sober. That's some type of a fallacy that goes on sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous with our old timers. We get to thinking we can stay sober because we've been sober. No, that's like trying to eat last week's sandwich tomorrow. It just doesn't work. I get to stay sober today for what I do today. This is the day I get to stay sober. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think Jim explained it very well today in the steps, that today we get to stay sober, not because we've been sober, but because of what we do today. This is the only day I got. Now, I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm extremely pleased to be here sober, just to be sober. And if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I hope the word being sober doesn't offend you as bad as it offended me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I said in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November, 1959, and the people of Alcoholics Anonymous talked to me about being sober, I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. It's physically sober. And that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out there on my happy road of destiny by people in those little black and white cars. You know, they got a big thing out in my country. It's new, they think. They think it's new. They call it intervention. I want you to know that the Los Angeles County Sheriff knew about intervention in 1940. And if you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life, too. I'll guarantee it. But I'm glad to be here. I hope if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, you learn to stay here. You can stay here long enough to understand what Alcoholics Anonymous speaks about when it speaks about being sober. Because I have been sober without any type of alcohol or mood-altering chemical in my system from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to this one. And I live out there, and I think about being sober a lot. And when I think about being sober, the idea that there's no alcohol and chemicals in my system doesn't even enter into the picture. Sobriety is the way I live. I lived a certain way for a long period of time, and for a long period of time, I couldn't stay sober. I have lived this way for a long, long period of time. And for all that period of time, it hadn't been necessary for me to drink anything, swallow anything, stick anything in my arm, or be locked up anywhere. Now, for that, I'm extremely grateful. So I hope you stick around long enough. Now, I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. And I only tell you that for one reason. I only tell you that because the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. That's all. And I never want to forget that a little over 34 years ago tonight, I was probably crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary. Now, because of a loving God, as he expressed himself through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I don't ever get anything else out of this deal at all, I could live with that for a long time. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight without any doubt in my mind whatsoever and tell you that that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. I'd love to be able to tell you that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs did in my life, they kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. I'm as sure as I'm standing here without alcohol working in my life, I'd have probably blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I have always been some type of emotional misfit. I never seemed to belong anywhere. I was angry, I was hostile, I was bitter, I didn't like who I was, where I wasn't like anybody I was around, I didn't like anything. I was just an angry, hostile little snot's what I was. I didn't like nothing. I knew as much about whiskey and what it would do to people when I was 6 years old as I know tonight. I knew all about whiskey. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. I had uncles who drank whiskey and went to penitentiaries. I had aunts who drank whiskey and worked in those houses on the other side of the tracks. I had a mother who drank whiskey and beat up my dad. I had a dad who drank whiskey and beat up mom. They both drank whiskey and beat me up. I saw what whiskey did to people. And I said, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to be better than they are. I'm just going to be better than them. But one day, sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house, I reached down underneath the porch and took a drink of his bootleg hooch. Just one thing. One thing I said I'd never do. And in that instant of my life, I sold myself into bondage for the next 20 years of my life. A bondage that took me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. Not to alcohol, or later to the drugs that came into my life, but to the feeling I got when I drank alcohol. Something happened to me when I drank that alcohol. I've learned now over a period of time being sober that I'm an alcoholic. And the reason I'm an alcoholic is because, not because I drank 14 million gallons of whiskey. Drinking 14 million gallons of whiskey wouldn't make me an alcoholic if I'm not an alcoholic. You know, an alcoholic is a little bit like being pregnant. You either are or you ain't. And the longer you go, the more it shows. That's just the way it works. What happened to me that day, as I look back on it now, is I had some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Not a bad reaction, an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It triggered some type of a craving inside of me that made me drink till I couldn't drink no more. Because every time I drank, the same thing happened to me. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol, they pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around out there. I went from reform school to reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I kind of like nut house a little better. It gives you a little more mileage on the street corner. Really, you want to? I don't know where you come from, but I came from one of them neighborhoods where we used to stand around and pass the jug around when I was a kid. And we look up and somebody say, there's old Joe. He just came out of San Quentin. We went, oh, want to be like Joe. Joe was a big man. Could you imagine what it'd be like now to be standing on the street corner and somebody said, look, there's old Rich. He just did 30 days in the care unit. Not in my neighborhood, he don't do that, I'll tell you that. In my neighborhood, they don't have insurance, so they don't have care units. But that's what I'm talking about. I'm sitting on a furlough from one of those reform schools when I'm 10 or 11 years old. I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. That's because it was the experimental stages of Thunderbird. That stuff never saw a grape. I'll tell you, it's bad. I tell you how bad it was. I was having dinner in Palm Springs in a restaurant one time, and I called a wine steward over, and I said to him, real serious, have you ever heard of Marco Petri red wine? He said, oh, yeah. He said, but I don't know anybody who ever drank it, who ever lived to talk about it. And so I said to him, I used to drink it by the gallon. He said, sure you did. Then he went over and stood in the corner. And every time I saw him watching me the rest of that evening, I'd do things like this. Just kept him on his toes. But I'm sitting on a furlough one day from one of these reform schools, and I'm drinking this wine, and it's not doing what it's supposed to do, and I don't know what to do about it. It ain't quite cutting the mustard, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, why don't you try these? And he gave me some pills. I don't remember saying to him that day, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Thank God they weren't X-Lax, that's all I can tell you. We could have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives Anonymous somewhere. I could be standing here tonight as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when she was little. I hear stuff stupider than that around here, but I guess that'll work. All I can tell you, that stuff worked. Thank God it worked. Because I'm sitting on that same street corner a couple of years later on a furlough from another reform school, and I'm eating these pellets and drinking this wine, nothing's working, and a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm around in and out of institutions. That's what I do. That's what people like me do. I live out in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. You see, I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving, and I got an ego bigger than this whole room. Now, you don't need much more than that. And I took my inventory in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out a very simple thing. I found out before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, not one time in my entire life did I ever have any type of conscious concern or conscious thought for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth except for me. I wasn't interested in you or anybody else. I was only interested in you if you had something I wanted. And the minute I got whatever it is you had that I wanted, I wasn't interested in you anymore either. I never told anybody before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I loved them. Takers don't love people. Takers use people. If I told you I loved you, you were going to be able to use me. And I never did place myself in that position before I got here. I always knew that. And I'll tell you something. If you live that way for any period of time, what will happen to you happen to me. You'll end up somewhere crawling around in a cell at the age of 28 or 29 years old without anybody sending you penny postcards anymore. There ain't nobody left. Because I used them all up. I threw everything I had into the fight. I gave it everything I had. Everything I had. And then I gave it me. And I almost had to die before I could even come investigate Alcoholics Anonymous. 1951, I'm on my way to the penitentiary for the first time. And I stood out in Los Angeles County Jail where my mother screamed at me through the visiting screen that I was a murderer. It seemed that my 17-year-old brother had gotten into some of my poison, took an overdose of it and died. I didn't know how to handle that very well. I got mad at it and made it go away. 3 days later, I stood handcuffed between two detectives while they buried the only thing in life I probably cared anything about before I got here. And I didn't know what to do. I felt everything that day in my life, but I did not know what to do. I didn't have the simple gift of tears that God gives every creature that's born on the face of this earth. And the reason I didn't have them because I didn't think they were necessary. I just didn't think they were necessary. I went on to the penitentiary and I stayed there 4.5 years. I came out of there 4.5 years sicker than I was when I went in there. Just because I go sit somewhere and don't drink doesn't mean I get any better. I'm an alcoholic. If that's all I do is not drink, the only thing that sobriety has ever done for me is make life so unbearable that I can't stand it. Because you see, when I'm sober, I don't know about anybody else, but when I'm sober, I've got a long line of wreckage right there. I can't get rid of the faces, the people I'd harmed, and the things I've done. That's what I've got when I'm sober. I can't stand to be sober. And it moves it out of the way. And I don't care what I have to do. Not to be sober. I don't really care. People used to say to me, don't you understand the consequences? I didn't care. The consequences of not drinking were much more severe than the consequences of drinking. That's the way I live my life. I come walking out of that institution bound determined. What a psychiatrist at San Quentin told me wasn't true. He said, Johnny, people like you don't change. He says, you're doomed to die in an institution. He took me down and showed me a little green room. He says, you're going to end up here, hotshot. I told him, not me. I'm different. The theme song of the alcoholic. Saved my life then, kills me today. Funny, isn't it? Come walking out of that institution, bound and determined. I had that deal beaten. 6 months later, I'm laying in a nut house, kicking and screaming. And that's when I made my round to some of the better laughing academies in the country, interviewing psychiatrists. I had to sit there and talk to them with my wraparound overcoat on. We engaged in meaningful conversations. They talked to me about my mama. I talked to them about their mama. That's when they introduced me to a thing called better living through electricity. And what I hope and pray to God is my last interview with a psychiatrist happened to me in a federal government hospital in Fort Worth, Texas. Can you imagine that? Sick people down there in Fort Worth. You know that, Jim? If I live to be 1,000 years old, I'll never forget that day. I never forget that day. Up, Up until that time in my life, I don't even remember ever wanting to do anything else, never wanted to be anything else. I had an answer for everything anyhow. I had answers. That's all I ever needed was an answer. So I had an answer. I was putting it in my arm, and I was swallowing it, and I was drinking it. I had this answer. Didn't make any difference. But now I don't have that answer anymore. Now I can't get rid of the nightmares. Now I can't get rid of me at all. Now, as long as I'm awake, I'm in trouble. Now the pictures won't go away. Now the tapes won't quit being playing. Now the committee don't quit singing songs to me. I'm in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. And I moved in, and I sit down at this psychiatrist's office this day. I looked up against his wall, and I saw all kinds of plaques and diplomas and degrees. And I think for a moment, in a brief moment, there was a little bit of hope that came up. I thought, maybe this is where the answer is. Maybe this man knows. Maybe this is where the end of my journey is. Maybe this is when I get out of hell. I didn't even know I was in hell, but I thought maybe that's when I was getting out of it. The minute the psychiatrist or the doctor opened his mouth that day, he dashed every bit of hope I ever had clean down the toilet. He looked at me and he said, "Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems." When I was a kid in the Hutchinson State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be all right. When I was in Juvenile Hall in Los Angeles, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be all right. When I was in the Whittier State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, I'd be all right. They told me that in San Quentin. They told me that in Folsom. They told me that in Pacific Lodge Boys Home. They told me that in Lexington. They told me that in Fort Worth. They told me that everywhere I went. What none of those people ever took into consideration, and none of them still ever take into consideration, every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. As physically sober. I wanted to scream out on them, "Good God, doctor, don't you understand?" But they don't. I'm sorry. The only people who understand people like me are people like me. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works. One alcoholic talks to another alcoholic and something happens. The greatest words I ever heard in my life, I heard in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Five simple little words that are life to the alcoholic. "We understand how you feel." Man, nobody ever said that to me before I got here. They said to me, "Don't do that. Why are you doing that?" "I don't know. I have to." I didn't know that. I left that institution. I left Fort Worth, Texas on a Greyhound bus as fast as I couldn't even pass the examination to get in that nut house. I got on a Greyhound bus and went to Los Angeles to kill myself. And I almost made it. They tied me down on a bed shortly thereafter, weighing 128 pounds, the color of those chairs. With a doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I'm going to die. To his words to me, "Son, you're going to die and nothing we can do for you." It's okay with me. I didn't want to live anyhow. I wanted out, and I didn't know how to get out. That's the answer for the alcoholic, you understand. The answer for the alcoholic when he can no longer drink and he can no longer stand sobriety, the answer to the alcoholic is to kill himself. That's the only out. That's why alcoholics commit suicide cold sober. That's why we commit suicide, because we can't stand to live sober, and we can't stand to live drunk no more, and we can't get drunk anymore. That's why people like me kill themselves. That doctor told me that 3 days in a row. The third day he told me that, I had some type of a terror grip me that I was going to live and not die. There are things in the world much more frightening of dying. There's much more terrifying to me than dying was the idea that I was going to have to live. I was going to have to get up out of that bed. I was going to have to go to the penitentiary, come back out and start that rat race all over again. And I didn't want to do that anymore. That was terrifying to me. I did not want to live that way anymore, but I didn't know how not to. I laid in that bed for 18 days and 18 nights. I didn't eat, sleep, drink, or do anything. I just laid there. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened. There were no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying we got an A meeting down there. I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on the bed I'd just gotten off of. And there's a good reason for that. I'm an alcoholic. In the back of my mind, where my problem seemed to be centered, was the knowledge that when I can't stand life any longer, I can ingest something into my system and I'm okay right now. That's all. I just want to be okay right now. I don't want to be all right tomorrow. I want to be all right right now. I knew that. And so I got loaded again. I stood in front of a Superior Court judge, and a man called me a blood-sucking parasite in society. He said I had no right being around decent people. Told a woman sitting in the courtroom who was carrying my child, that she cared anything at all about that child, that I'd never be allowed to lay eyes on it. What that man said to me that day literally drove me insane. Because there's been one thing I have never been able to do, one very simple little thing. I have never been able to hide me from me. I can hide me from you. I'm good at it. Matter of fact, I'm a master at hiding me from you. I can keep you away from me in all various type of situations that I've learned in a lifetime of not letting you in to see me. I can keep you away from me. But I have never been able to hide me from me. I've always known what kind of a scum I was. Man, I got the record to prove it. I got the faces of the people I'd harmed and the things I've done. I've got the record. I know what kind of a scumbag I am. When I heard it that day, it literally drove me insane. For the next 9 months of my life, I drifted in and out of total insanity in that cell. And that's what came to Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November, 1959. Didn't come here to get sober. I was sober. Matter of fact, if I'd have known where I was coming, I probably wouldn't even have come. The reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous Institution, I didn't let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 31 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around there ever since. When you open up the door, some of us have been fenders coming in. That's just how simple. Some of us even stick. You throw enough crap against the wall, some of it will stick. That's how simple it is. I didn't know what this thing was. I had no idea. I sit in the back row when I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. You know, newcomers don't come to, you know, newcomers always sit in the back. You know why? They don't want to sit up front and somebody mistaken for a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, for Christ's sakes. I sit back there. I had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. I remember looking up on the backboard, I saw two big aids, and I thought to myself, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I said to this guy, what is this? He says, Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. I went by to see the big gangster in there hanging out with them winos. I didn't know what I was, but I wasn't an alcoholic. So I told myself, well, I think I'll wait around and listen to these women's racy stories. Now, you got to remember something. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't very many young, pretty girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. There just wasn't. These old gals got up to talk that day and said they drank for a long time. You could look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. They said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. Knew everything. People like me who sit in the back row know everything. We know everything. We're a walking encyclopedia of useless information. We know everything. We know so damn much about what ain't true, we don't know what is true. The only thing we don't know what to do, we don't know how to not drink. We don't know how to keep from drink. We don't know how to keep staying sober. We don't know how to keep doing this thing. But we know everything else. See, people like me, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was so frightened of failing, I had never tried anything. I had an answer. It worked. I've always needed an answer, and I've always had an answer, and it always worked. As long as I got an answer, I sure ain't going to look for another one. People like me don't look for things that don't work. If it worked, that's why I drank. That's why I ate pills. That's why I stuck needles in my arm. Because it was an answer. It was not a problem, it was an answer. And I'll tell you something. If it was still an answer, I'd still be doing it. That's as simple as I know how to tell you. If it was still my answer, I'd still be looking for it. I'd still be doing it. I'd have never looked any further. If my answers were still my answers, I would have never had to find another. That's why I've been an Alcoholics Anonymous so much. Alcoholics Anonymous is my answer. I found out a way to live. Well, I don't have to do those things anymore. And I didn't know that. Because these people talked about God that day when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got up and ran out of the room. God was the reason I was. It was not my fault. I want you to understand that. People like me, when we run out of everything in the world to blame, we can always blame God for it. God don't talk back. You sit around and listen in your club room someday, and you'll hear it all the time. People will say, well, I guess if God wants me to have a job, he'll shoot it down here to the club. Next time you get hungry, go lock yourself up in a closet and pray for a hot dog. If God squirts you one through the keyhole, you call me. I've been looking for a deal like that all my life. I tell you what I've learned about God. I haven't learned very much about it because I never... Well, I'm not a Baptist. I'm not a Catholic. I'm a nothing, I guess. I'm just an alcoholic. What I've learned about God, and I've learned about an Alcoholics Anonymous. My grandmother tried to teach me about her God. She said God punished little boys who were bad. God never did Grandma any favors. Grandma packed that load until she died. What I've learned about God, I've learned that God will not do anything for me that I can do for myself. That's what I've learned here. It's only been one thing in my life I've never been able to do. I've never been able to keep from taking a drink. Of myself and by myself, I cannot keep from taking a drink of alcohol. Yet I haven't had a drink of alcohol or a mood-altering chemical since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to this one. Something basically has happened to me. Nor have I had a conscious thought or a conscious desire to put any of that stuff in my system from my first meeting to this one. Now that doesn't make me wonderful. That makes me very sick. My God seems to understand that I can't harbor a sick thought in my head for over 30 seconds without putting it into action. So I'm not allowed to have certain thoughts, thank God. I got enough bad ones the way it is without any of those types of completely destroying me. But I never knew what was going on here. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous confused me more than anybody ever confused me in my life. I didn't have the slightest idea what was going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd sit in the back row of the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. People would get up here and say, I used to drink that whiskey. I drank that whiskey and drank that whiskey, and I come to A&A, and I ain't had a drink since. I'm just happy as I can get. I say, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I'm nuts. Maybe I'm not alcoholic. I guess I'm not. If I wish I could be. God, if I could just be an alcoholic. You don't hear that much. If I could just be one, then all I have to do is not drink. And I'd be wonderful. Then they say things like, you got to get active. I run around like a chick with my head cut off. Picked up ashtrays, poured coffee. I thought action was being in motion. I didn't know any better. I thought, that's what I thought action was. I'd do all this stuff. I'd pour coffee and empty ashtrays and smile. Back to inventory point back there. And I'd say to myself, see, I'm not alcoholic. See, I'm not drinking. I'm still crazy. If I was alcoholic, all I'd have to do is not drink and pick up these damned ashtrays, and I'd be wonderful. But there's more to it than that. And every time I said to one of these people, what is it? They say, oh, well, it's in the book, Johnny. I said, what's in the book? Oh, it's there. You go look for it, you'll find it. You know, I made a fantastic discovery since I've been sober. You want to hide anything from an alcoholic? Put it in a book. They don't look there. It's even worse. True. Seems to be vogue in some parts of the country to have a therapist to get in touch with your feelings. I went into the book Alcoholics Anonymous, I suppose, what I said in that penitentiary. Not to find a way of live which is beyond my wildest drunken dreams and afford me the good life I live today and have lived. Probably to open that book, I went into the book Alcoholics Anonymous to prove to you how different this thing wouldn't work for me. That's how sick I was. And the greatest single event that ever happened to me in my entire lifetime happened to me a little over 31 years ago in a room about this time of the year, in springtime of the year. in a room doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. I heard myself admit to this man that I was an alcoholic. From way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. As I stand before you tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. Exactly. There ain't no doubt about it whatsoever in my mind. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something, I could not have your program. And the reason I couldn't have your program is I separated me from you. I was either better than you or worse than you, or smarter than you or dumber than you. I have little things I would say, well, you may have to work this program that way, the way it says in that book, but because I'm blue-eyed, I don't have to quite do it quite that way. Huh. Well, if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, and I don't know who is and who ain't, the only answer that's ever been an answer for an alcoholic in 5,000 years of recorded history for alcoholism is in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the only thing that works for people like me. It's the only thing that's ever worked for people like me. Thank God I've known that. From that moment of surrender to this moment, I have never wanted to be anywhere else doing anything else with anybody else. I've always wanted to be in AA. I never wanted to be anywhere else. Somehow or other, sitting in that room with that man, I've made a fantastic discovery after the fact. I made a discovery that I'm not looking for anything anymore. I found it. If it's any better anywhere else, they can keep it. I couldn't stand it. And that's the truth. That's the honest to God truth. My search was over. From that moment of admission, or surrender, or whatever you want to call it, it says in the third chapter of our book, in the second paragraph, that you have to admit to your innermost self that you're alcoholic. That's the first step in recovery. That's the first step. You're your innermost self. That's not admitting it to somebody just to make them sound good. Down here is where you got to admit it. And then everything else is inside job. And so what I did, I got about the business of trying to fulfill the conditions of this program of recovery. You know, it's funny, they read the promises here tonight. And it's funny, nobody ever seems to tell anybody around here that the promises aren't promised until in the ninth step. That's when the promises come true. There are two sets of promises in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a set of promises that'll tell you what'll happen to you if you do it to this point. There's a set of promises in that book that'll tell you what'll happen to you if you don't. And those aren't good options. To sicken and die, or to die an alcoholic death, to go insane or to commit suicide, those are not options. The book says a lot of things about if we don't do these things, if we skip these vital steps, we may drink. And that's my primary purpose, you understand? My primary purpose in life is not to get good. My primary purpose in life is to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I don't have any other purpose. And this is not my occupation. This is my advocation. To put a price tag on it don't make it any better. Matter of fact, it cheapens it. It was freely given to me. I give it back freely. That's the way it works with me. I had a sponsor who made that happen and made it possible. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words. Mother ran all around it in there somewhere. I had people in my life who were more concerned with saving my life and who weren't hurting my feelings. So they would tell me things like this, that cussing was a crutch for conversational cripples. Then they stood my wrath when I rained on them. Thank God for people like that. They were more concerned with saving my life than they were hurting my feelings. I'll tell you how that's changed. A couple of weeks ago, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I walked in. I'm going to be the talker at the meeting that night. And a guy walked up to me, and he said, Johnny. And he said, yeah. He said, a lot of newcomers here tonight. And I said, good. He said, well, he said, you don't talk about God? I said, probably. Why? Said, oh, you shouldn't do that. I said, why not? He said, it's the newcomers. May run them out. They're sensitive. Let me tell you newcomers something. If God will run you out of Alcoholics Anonymous, whiskey will run your rusty butt back in here. That's what it's all about. I don't know any nice way to tell you. There ain't no nice way to tell you, because this disease I have ain't a nice disease. You know, I came out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961. My mother fell off the steps lying drunk. I picked her up and put her on the couch. Said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I went over to see my mother Tuesday. She's drunk again. Mom stays drunk. I've learned more about the disease of alcoholism and working with alcoholics from my little mother than I've learned from anybody else on the face of the earth. And I work with a lot of drunks. I've learned I don't have the power to get anybody sober. None. I don't even have any power to keep me sober. If I had any power to get anybody sober, I wouldn't be here. I'm powerless. This book, which guides my life, tells me that I have a daily reprieve from alcoholism that I got right now. This is my day. I got no other. This is the day I live. This is the day I get to be sober. This is the day I get to contribute to life, or I get to take from life, or I get to do whatever I get to do in life today, because I can't guarantee I'm going to make it to my hotel room. I start going to meetings. First thing I know, that woman who was taking my child away from me came back and brought that kid. And she got pregnant. And my sponsor suggested, well, he didn't suggest anything. He said, "Why don't you go to work, you bum?" I said, "Wait a minute, Norm. I'm no bum." He said, "What are you?" I said, "I'm a sober AA member." He said, "You're a sober AA member, bum." He said, "Bums are people who don't work." I went on and got a job. Went to work. And I'm real happy. I used to stand off in the corner and watch people, see what they do when they get paid. I didn't know what people do when they get paid. They'd come in there with little baskets and put them kids in the basket and wheel them down the aisle and fill them full of groceries and smile. And go to the cash register and have shock treatments and just... Finally got a paycheck. I ran home. I said, "Let's go to the market." She said, "We don't need anything." I said, "We're going to the market anyhow." She says, "Why?" And I said, "That's what they do." She said, "Who?" I said, "Them." Have you ever tried to explain them to them? Strange. If anybody wants to know who the thems are I'm talking about, send them to Al-Anon. They're them. You steely-eyed little devil, you. I figured out Mary Pearl's problem in Memphis, Tennessee. All that crap she'd gone through, if she'd have just known, she could have drank. I mean, geez. I mean, she went through all that stuff with nothing. Just like taking a drink of water to her, don't do nothing. I'd taken a little drink and killed him. God, I wouldn't have let him out and got conscious. Don't them Al-Anon's cruel? You know the cruelest thing I ever heard anybody ever done? I heard an Al-Anon woman talk one night in Tucson. You know what she did? She came home at night. Her poor little husband staggered in drunk in a blackout. She threw a blanket over him and beat him up with a hammer. And didn't know how that happened to him the next day when he came to. What happened to me? "I don't know. That's the way you come home." God, Mary Pearl's got a smile that big. She's found a new thing, for Christ's sake. When I was new sober, I didn't have a driver's license. My driver's license had been suspended for the rest of my natural life. And so I had to ride my little girl's bicycle to meetings. She had a little pink bicycle. It had a big back wheel and a little bitty front wheel. It had a basket on it with flowers waving all the way through it. And I used to ride it right through my old neighborhood on the way to meetings. And there they'd be standing. "Oh, that AA really works, doesn't it, John?" So I saved up a little money to buy me a car, because I'm tired of being humiliated. I called my sponsor, Norm, and I said, "Norm, I'm going to buy a car." He says, you have a driver's license, Johnny? And I said, no. Why? My driver's license has been suspended for the rest of my life. He says, then you won't drive a car for the rest of your life. I said, why not? He says, citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you who think they can do any damn thing they want to just because they're sober. So the time came when I got a driver's license and insurance, and I was perfectly legal. I went and bought a car, and he wouldn't let me get a car until all that was possible, and I was afraid to tell him no, because I knew I didn't know, and I knew he did know because he was sober. And so I drove over to his house in my little new car, and I honked the horn, and he came out, and he put his arms around me, and he started to hug me, and he said, Johnny, I'm so proud of you. He says, I think you're starting to get the idea that there isn't anything special about you just because you don't drink alcohol anymore. He said, maybe you're starting getting the idea that there's nothing special about you just because you're not locked up anymore. He said, maybe you're getting the idea that you have to abide the rules just like everybody else does and always has done. And you don't get no special compensation from anything in life just because you don't drink anymore. He says, maybe you can stay sober if you have those ideas in your head. He says, nothing special about you whatsoever. You're just a very fortunate person who's found a way to live where they don't have to drink anymore. I'll be forever grateful for my sponsor teaching me that. I'm not one of God's chosen people. I used to call my sponsor up from time to time, like most people do, and I'd say things to him like this, Norm, my program ain't working. He'd say, why don't you try ours? He'd say, jackass, your program never did work. And I'm going to tell you something. Your program don't work either. Ours does, but yours don't. If your program works, you don't need to be here. That's as simple as I know how to tell you. Our program works. Works real good. It's the only program that I've had incorporated in my life in the last 60 years of my life. It's the only program and the thing I've ever needed. I don't need to go on and beyond or up and above. I just need to be sober and have a purpose in life and carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. My family's grown up. I can't stand here and tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet, and every day I've lived on the sunny side of the street because there ain't nothing special about me. I live out in the world like everybody else. Things happen. My ego becomes inflamed and enlarged, and I become selfish and self-centered and create a lot of problems for myself. That's the only problem I have. Is my selfishness and my self-centeredness, and I think I know. And so I get involved in things I shouldn't be involved in, and then I get to pay the penalty for it. That's all. I can tell you the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works no matter what comes at you, as long as you go to meeting and you try to have some type of a direction from somebody other than yourself. See, when I was running my life, I had an idiot doing it. When I run my own life, I have an idiot running my life. I don't know what's right and what's wrong for me, for God's sakes. How would I know? My track record doesn't say that I know what's right and what's wrong for me. I just do what everybody else does around here. I used to call up Norm, and I'd say, Norm, what am I supposed to do, for God's sake? He said, why do you ask me? I said, you're my sponsor, Norm. He said, why do you ask me? Well, you're my sponsor. He said, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? I said, what am I supposed to do? He said, you do what I do. I said, just what is it you do? He says, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. See how they are? Nobody ever tells you nothing around here. They give you riddles to figure out. I'll tell you, Norm Alpe was my sponsor for 22 years before he died. And by the time he died, I knew how he reacted in every given situation of his life. I knew how he acted in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew how he acted when he was around his family. I knew how he acted when he was on a golf course. I knew how he acted when he went out to dinner. I saw how he treated people. I saw the consideration and courtesy he gave other people. The same courtesy and consideration he taught me, he gave to other people. I saw him put that action in action. I saw him do it. And by the time he died, I knew how he reacted in every given situation in his life. The only one thing I never did, I never sit in a bedroom watching him in bed with his wife. I would have if he'd asked, but I just never did. I wanted to know. And the reason I wanted to know is I knew I didn't know. And that's still true today. I don't know. I just do whatever I'm asked to do around here. That's all. Whatever it is. And I think it's a privilege to do it. I don't think I have a right to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I don't drink. I don't think I have a right to come in here and occupy the space or to wander around and disturb people in meetings because I'm not drinking. I don't think I have that right. I think it's a privilege to come and sit with you good people. I think it's a privilege to be allowed to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. They let me put the chairs away in my home meeting. I started the meeting. I'm the assistant chairman. I helped the chairman put the chairs away. And he's somebody I sponsor. He says, "You're not putting them right." But I do it. I do it because I love to do it. I love to be in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was an old man that I ran around with by the name of Chuck Chamberlain, who solidified the idea that Norm Alpie talked about when he told me there was nothing special about me because I don't drink. Chamberlain brought that home to me better than anybody else ever had in language that I could understand. Because I was riding down in a meeting with him one night and I was reading him this gossip thing called Why We Were Chosen. He stopped me. He said, "We ain't chosen." I said, "It says here." He said, "I don't care what that says. We ain't chosen." I said, "What are we then?" He said, "We're God's kids, Johnny. All of us are. If I am, you are, and if you are, I am. God makes the just as well as the unjust." Old Bill and I were coming out of the hotel this morning, coming over here. We both walked out in the rain, and it didn't just rain on me, it rained on Bill too. It rains on everybody. I'm sure if I went down somewhere and tried to find a drunk, the rain would be raining on that drunk as well as the sober people. That's what Papa taught me. He said that rain falls on the just as well as the unjust. And so I asked him in my smart aleck matter, "How come I'm sober then? I want to know how come I'm sober. If I'm not special, how come I'm sober?" He said, "That's very simple. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it, so he treats you like it." Now, how do God's kids act? Where do you go to school to find out how God's kids act? I don't know where you went to school to find out how God's kids act, but I watched them in meetings. I went to meetings with my sponsor. I thought he was one of God's kids because he acted like one of God's kids. He went to meetings. He sat still in meetings. He didn't disturb people in meetings. He learned a little simple thing around here that very few people seem to understand, a thing called simple common courtesy. He used to say things to me, "Shut up, Johnny," if I was talking to him in a meeting. He'd say, "If you don't want to listen, that's fine. If you don't want to sit and listen to me, that's your business. You don't have to. But for God's sake, maybe somebody else does." I never thought about that. Selfish, self-centered people don't worry about the people sitting next to them. When I get up and stumble over somebody to go get me a cup of coffee because I can't stand it for 2 seconds, I'm not considered worried about the person sitting next to me. I'm selfish and I'm self-centered and I'm self-serving, so therefore I'm sickened and I'm close to drinking. That's very simple. When I'm that much deep into myself and my selfishness, my self-centeredness, I'm very close to drinking. Didn't know that. That's the way God's kids act. They dress up and look like they're supposed to have a life that was worthy enough to be saved. They clean up, they straighten up, and they grow up. And they go to work, and they live just like all the rest of the people live. And they do the things in Alcoholics Anonymous that the people of Alcoholics Anonymous ask them to do. I know that because I've been around a lot of God's kids. And I've watched the ones who do it and the ones who don't do it. I watch the ones who wander around and I watch the ones who stay. The ones who wander don't stay, and the ones who do, do. It's very simple. I watch them. I do what they do. That doesn't mean that I become them. That means I just do it. It's the action. It's what I do. It's not what I think. It's not what I say. What you are, speak so loud I can't hear a word you say, Norm used to say. And that's the truth. What you are, speak so loud I can't hear a word you say. Nobody has to tell me. where they came from, what they're doing. I can look at the uniforms and see what they think. I can see the uniforms that people said in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can see how much, what they're doing, what they're trying to do, where they're trying to be different, where they're trying to be one among many, or what they're trying to be. There's nothing secrecy about that. I learned that by watching what God kids happen. You know, I love being in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me? Theology and my grandmother's church took God out of here, stuck him over there somewhere, beyond my reach, beyond any type of understanding, beyond anything. That's what theology did. Took God and put him over there. Alcoholics Anonymous took God down off the shelf and put him right back in here where he belongs. I sit in his meeting all day long today. I heard that little girl and Mary Pearl and Jim. And I sit in that meeting, and a miraculous thing happened to me sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I listened. I become more concerned for their well-being than I was about my well-being. And in that instant of my life, I'm closer to God than I'm ever going to be. That's as close to God as I'm ever going to get. When I'm more interested in your welfare than I am in mine, I'm never in my life ever going to be any closer to God than I am at that moment. And it don't make any difference where I'm at. That's when I'm full of God. A wise man one time, a long time ago, said that nature abhors a vacuum, but God abhors a vacuum even more under heaven and earth. Empty yourself of self. You will be automatically full of God. And when I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I watch somebody and I see them and I get involved in what they're doing and I'm more concerned with their well-being than I am with my own, when I'm given the privilege of talking to an alcoholic, when I get to go sit down and put my arm around a drunk and let them know that I care what happens to them, I let them know that people like me can stay sober, people like them can stay sober. I believe that the only purpose for anything of a thing like this is not to entertain you. I'm not in the entertainment business. My business is to build a bridge of understanding between me and that drunk out there who knows that they can walk across there and come over here and get sober too. The book says it very, very, very nice. It says, nobody has sunken too low or been discredited too much to be welcome here. The only requirement for this thing is to clean house and trust God. Alcoholics Anonymous works. It works real, real good. I know because it works for me. The little girl I was never supposed to see got three of the prettiest little boys you ever saw. They come over to my house and tear it up, throw my slippers down the stairs, cut the dog's hair, knock over lamps and break them and blame it on the dog. I was telling a story about my older grandson. I'll tell you the story. I'll tell you how well I am. My oldest daughter got this little 13-year-old grandson who's the joy of my life. His name is Jim. She called me up one day and she said, Daddy, I said, yes. She said, Jim wants to play the saxophone. I said, well, that's real nice. She said, yeah, but my credit's not too good. Would you go down and co-sign for me so we can rent this saxophone for him to take lessons? I said, well, sure, I'd be glad to. So I'm driving down to meet him at this music store down Huntington Beach where they live, and on down there I start to think. I start to think about my grandson playing this alto saxophone. I don't just think about him playing it right then. I'm thinking about it 5 years from now. And the picture in my mind is this little blonde-headed boy blowing out of his mind on drugs in a little smoke-filled cafe, blowing the saxophone. And by the time they got there, I ran out of the car and said, he don't need a saxophone. Do you realize what he can do? He can get into the seat of Daddy. Daddy, everybody doesn't think like you. Thank God. That's my normal daughter. She's not alcoholic. And she's my youngest daughter. Well, if they walk like a duck and talk like a duck and act like a duck, there's a good chance they are ducks, you know what I mean? So she seems to be doing fine. I don't know. Not up to me to label anybody alcoholic. I can't even label my mother alcoholic. But my daughter's joy is my life. None of my kids have ever seen me drink.
thank to you. Thank be to God and thank you to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. None of my grandkids have never seen me do any of those kind of things. My grandkids know that Grandpa's there, and all I got to say to Grandpa is, I want, I need, I got to have Grandpa, and Grandpa gets it. That's how simple it is. I love life, and I love these people. And Alcoholics Anonymous made that possible. See, I have never forgotten who wanted me when nobody else did. I have never forgotten that. I have never, one time, ever forgotten who's responsible for my sobriety and where it came from. And it sure ain't me. I have never, ever forgotten it. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. I can't drink and live, and of myself, I can't keep from drinking. I don't have to think to drink. All I got to quit doing is what you tell me to do around here, and someday I'll wake up drunk. That's all. I don't have to think about it. I'll just go do it. Because my life will be so uncomfortable and so unbearable that I'll have to drink. So I think I'll just keep on doing what I've been doing. I kind of like it. I kind of like waking up in the morning, and I kind of like sleeping at night. I kind of like going home and seeing that little brown-eyed woman I'm married to and that little dog. I kind of like my grandkids come floating around her. I kind of like them drunks calling me on the phone. And what do we do now? Do what I do. Oh, God, here we go again. But I don't know anything else to do. I really don't. I guess I could stand here forever and ever and ever and tell you about all the things that have been good to me in life, because my life is good. I don't know anybody in the world I trade places with. Nobody. I don't know anybody in the world who lives any better than I do. I know a lot of people who have more things than I do, but that doesn't mean they live any better than I do. That doesn't mean I don't make mistakes. I've made a lot of mistakes since I've been sober. You don't get drunk for making mistakes. You get drunk for defending your mistakes. I just never have to defend them. I just make mistakes and go on about my business. Realize I've done the best I can, make my amends, and go on about my business. That's what I do. And every living thing I have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every living thing I may ever hope to have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you better believe this. It's a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand tonight. But for the grace of God, AA, and good folks like you, I could have missed it all. God bless you.